This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
What happens when you take a multicultural, multi-passionate and multi-talented young American woman and plonk her at the bottom of Te Waipounamu Aotearoa in the early 2000s? Today's guest, Kelly Hocking, recently performed a highly successful one-woman show at Dunedin Fringe called Lady Luck, which explores this experience from a fictional character's point of view. But she's here with us today at ORFM to overthink and overshare the real-life version of events. Welcome to Tell Me Moya, where the chats are candid, the laughs are loud, and nothing is off-limits. I'm Harriet Moya, and each episode I'm sitting down with brilliant women, or people who identify as women, for no filter and no nonsense chats about, well, pretty much anything. Real, relatable, and at times raucous, Tell Me Moya dives right into the conversations we want to have but don't have time for, and the ones we don't want to have but we know we should. Strap in. Are you ready for Tell Me Moya? Season 1 of Tell Me Moya kicks off quite simply with a collection of conversations with eight interesting women I know, and my great friend, who's actually doing a booby shimmy shake in the studio with me right now, we're so excited, my great friend, colleague and fellow multipreneur Kelly Hocking fits firmly into this category, and we are so lucky to catch her in Dunedin before she heads out on a three-month national schools tour with the Ugly Shakespeare Theatre Company. Kelly, welcome to Tell Me Moya.
Thank you, Harriet. It is a total honor and treat to be here.
Kelly is a lifelong performer and creator. She works throughout Aotearoa as an actor, vocalist, writer, comedian, and educator. Her business, The Voice Lab NZ, provides vocal coaching and vocal health support for hundreds of clients and is based here in Aotearoa. She won the Otago Raw Comedy Championship in 2024, and just a few weeks ago, she took home a Dunedin Theatre Award for Outstanding Performance. So completely comfortable on the stage, bit of comedy, bit of improv, and yet, in our communications ahead of today, Kelly was like, you need to please tell me what some of these questions are going to be, because I need to be prepared. I'll be so much better if I'm prepared. And I wanted to lead with that because I think that's something that a lot of people mm-hmm. would relate to, Kelly. So tell me, how is it you are a comedian and like very adept at improv and doing those things live on stage, and yet somehow for an interview you need to be prepared?
You know, I think it's because it's sort of an in-between zone. Like, if I'm on stage doing stand-up or in a show where I'm using improv, the things just come to me 100% in the moment. And there's a, kind of a rule about that that you're used to, that some stuff doesn't work and it's not a problem and you move on very quickly. And then the other type of work I do, where I'm, you know, memorizing material that either I've written or someone else has written, it's very, very well planned and executed. And so I think live interviews fall into this weird gray pit in between. And I feel like my fingers and my brain are a lot faster than my mouth. And so I've just noticed in the past when I'm in interviews, I will shut down and say, I don't know, like I'll call it a church or textbook answer because my brain comes up with that. And sometimes it's things I don't actually think or feel, but I just think that's the right response. And then I look back and I'm like, why didn't I say
all these brilliant,
life-changing idea, you know? And so I have found in the past, if I can get just an idea of what we're, you know, vaguely an idea of what we're going to talk about, it just allows me to be more comfortable. And when I'm more comfortable, I'm a lot funnier and smarter.
Who knew? You're amazing. It's very exciting to have you here. I'm so excited to have you. So this is my first season, and I'm just going to trial something throughout the season where I want to ask all the beautiful, amazing women who come into the studio, what I want to ask them to kick things off is, do you think women really can have it all?
I love this question. No. I don't think so. I mean, this is not one I had to hem and haw about. This is a quick fire no
hem
for me.
Hem and haw, did you say?
Hem and haw. Is
I
that
told
a thing?
You she's American.
Is that a thing they say?
Hem
here?
And haw. I don't know. What would we?
Um and ah. Yeah. That's the big difference.
We don't ham and haw.
We hem and haw.
Ham and haw.
We hem and haw back
that's
home.
That's what we do at Christmas. We ham and haw.
But no, I don't think it's exclusive to women at all. I and this question or to quantify it, I don't think anyone can have it all because all isn't really an option.
If you're doing it all, you're probably doing it all not very well.
Yeah, and if you don't have anything left to strive for or try to change up and balance or try to achieve, then what's going to keep you going?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, because you've always got other things to be like learning for and growing into.
And as I was thinking about that statement, I'm like, I don't want to come across like I'm trying to endorse hustle culture and like, oh, we have to always be doing more and more and more. But it's more like, to me, if this seems really bold and cheesy, but like constantly re-examining your priorities and figuring out where your motivations lie and pursuing different things is, I feel like, why we're here.
I don't think it's an endorsement of hustle because I think that actually making time for rest can be included
absolutely
in that list of things that you strive for or balance or all of those things. So, yeah, I don't worry. You're not making us all feel guilty for not hustling hard enough, Kelly. Although one has to say you are a hustler.
Yeah,
you've got a lot on your plate at the moment. It's actually like sometimes I think I'm a bit crazy and then I look across to you and I'm like, oh, no, it's all good. There's somebody else doing equally as many stupid things.
I think a lot of it comes down to just the logistics of being self-employed. And, you know, you say yes to one event and, you know, a couple months away. And then by the time that event rolls around, there's been a few other things thrown your way that maybe too good of opportunities to pass up. And then before you know it, you're like, oh, no, I don't have enough hours in the day to do all the things.
So this is very much a description of your current situation.
Yes,
I know. Yeah. Pitched to do Lady Luck at Dunedin Fringe, mm-hmm. thinking it would be nice to have something to do, something to work towards. And then all of a sudden a bunch of amazing opportunities fell in your lap and suddenly you were like,
oh no,
shows by day, shows by night, rehearsals, everything.
Yeah, exactly. And I did not plan that. And I thought, oh, I'll do Lady Luck because for those who didn't see it, it's just a riotous, fun, quite silly show. I mean, I do have an undercurrent of more deeper themes if you peel back the layers there. But really, it was just a bit of fun. And I've spent the past couple of years doing some really heavy theater. And I wanted to write and play something that really made both me and other people laugh and bring joy. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to really focus on comedy next year, being this year we're in now the year of our Lord 2026.
And because there's not a lot of comedy going on anywhere else in 2026.
It's not very funny. Not a good time. And so, yeah, I had that on the cards, and then I got offered this awesome schools tour with Ugly Shakespeare. And I have to say both parties were incredibly kind and supportive, and Lara McGregor and Connie Boston and the Ugly Shakespeare team were really supportive of me being able to be in Ulta Poti for the week of my shows in Fringe.
Yeah.
And then likewise, Fringe has been really kind working around my schedule for tech and things. So I'm super grateful to both of those entities.
Well, they're both entities that are accustomed to the hustle themselves, right?
That's so true.
Got to make it work for everybody. And so it's quite interesting that you have your plate full of performing work currently, Kelly, because as a good friend of yours, I happen to know that not so long ago, you threw in the towel with music theatre. You're like, that's it, I'm retiring at the ripe old age of about 36 or something.
Yeah.
And you sort of just disappeared off the radar for a bit there from performing. And I know that this is in part due to the fact that you were actually studying your master's, which is super impressive, a massive sort of financial and lifestyle commitment that you made. Mm-hmm. And well done and bravo. You're phenomenal for even giving that a go. Mm-hmm. And so in part that was due to you disappearing off to study for your master's. But was there anything else going on there? Like what? Tell us about the need to retract somewhat.
I also wrote a solo show about quitting musical theater called Rags to Witches, which was essentially, I don't know, I looked back on a lot of the musical theater that I'd done, and whilst a lot of it had been very formative when I was younger, mostly in my 20s, I'm 42 now, just for context, I just found that I was losing some of the joy in it, and a lot of it was, to be honest, I was able to play some really great complex roles, but the roles that I was sort of known for were mostly written by men. And yeah. I was just starting to feel a bit frustrated with the very narrow kind of subset of roles that I was able to portray. And I really wanted to push myself to do something else. I didn't really know what that was.
Sure. Okay.
But I knew that sometimes you have to go back to clear the slate entirely to mm-hmm. be able to reapproach your creative life. And sure. to me, I did not want to be completely burned out by the art form. So I just took a step back.
Yeah, nice. I love that you took care of yourself in that way, that you knew enough about yourself to be able to make that decision. Because a lot of us, like, we might think that and that'd be a great idea in theory, but then when the little carrot gets dangled of a show that you've always wanted to do or a role you've always wanted to play, we're very quick to be back out there.
Yeah, and it's important to me that joy is of the basis of the performance that I'm doing, regardless of, you know, I've worked across what we would call, like, pro-am theater, where some people are in it are quote-unquote professional, some people are amateur. I've done a lot of straight amateur theater, and I've done a lot of professional theater. And across all of those types, there does come a stage where people can get quite, overused word maybe, but jaded.
Sure.
And tired of what they're doing, and they lose the joy. And yeah. I've been surrounded with people who've been having that experience, certainly a lot. And I really didn't want to get to that space. I understand it's a complete privilege to be able to do work that you actually find joy in. I recognize that. It's yeah. not, you know, the beggars can't be choosers of it all. But I was in the position where study was coming up and I had time to actually go, you know what, I can step away from this for a minute. And I'm glad I did. It helped me reframe things.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing like a beautiful resurgence of Kelly Hocking into the world. So you did your master's, mm-hmm. and I don't know a whole lot of detail about what you did. Mm-hmm. All I know is that you were really looking at the role of caregivers.
Yeah.
And I would love you to share with us, in summary, what sure. your master's degree was about.
So I did my master's in theater studies, and oftentimes people think that means I studied theater, but it's really, I did, but I use theater as a lens, as a tool to study a broader topic, which was caregiving inequities, gender caregiving inequities.
Okay.
So, you know, when you do a master's, it has to be really specific. So my scope wasn't huge. It was looking very specifically at Western nuclear families, which was defined by, you know, having a heterosexual two-parent home with children living under the same roof.
Okay.
It's a very small, specific thing. Did not have the scope to look at the myriad of other family sure. dynamics that we have. But, you know, 80% of unpaid caregiving labor worldwide falls to women.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's things to look after the home, look after children, looking after parents, looking after the environment.
Which will come as no surprise
listeners. Well, but actually, in saying that, not everybody is aware of how broad those statistics are.
High
that percentage is. So that's worldwide. Within Western society and within Aotearoa specifically, the estimate is around 70% of mm-hmm. within homes. It's 70% of the unpaid care labor is falling to women. Mm-hmm. And this is even true when both parents are in full-time work.
Yeah.
And interestingly, if you map different genders in Western society across their lifetimes, the gap gets even bigger during childbearing years, because then women tend to take on even more percentage
sure.
Of unpaid care work. And I mean, to tie it back to the can women have it all question, I think this really does affect both genders in the sense that men are, while they perhaps might not be aware of their lack of contribution within unpaid labor at home, it definitely indicates that they are spending less time with their children. And that's something that...
Well, even just in the home.
Yeah, even in the home. And that's something that hinders both genders, we're all genders. And, you know, in Scandinavian countries where both parties have parental leave, the mental health of both parties is greatly improved.
It's better.
So for men and women. And I mean, I would like, as a side note, that homosexual couples across the board come out with far less gender inequity. So that's part of the reason I wanted to keep my study to heterosexual couples.
Yes, more conclusive.
Yeah, more conclusive. But yeah, so what I did was try to research solutions that the nuclear family can make from within. Because when you look at these types of families in both art and in real life, there seems to be, to me, two solutions. And the first one goes hand in hand with, you know, late stage capitalism, which is that it's upon the woman to address the balance and her care labor on her own. Like, it's your fault. You've taken on too much. You need to take on less work and redress the balance.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying this is one of the
solutions.
This
is one of the solutions that you see in, like, films. Like, the woman realizes, like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to do all these caregiving responsibilities.
Yeah,
and it's like,
right.
Well, who does them then?
Yeah.
You know, like,
I'm going to leave the cups in the living room and see
and
how
then,
long
like,
it takes
yeah.
for someone to put
right.
them in the dishwasher. Yeah.
And
yeah.
the other option that I was discovered is, like, massive societal change. Well, that'll never happen in late-stage capitalism, so we'll just have to wait till we all live in a different world. And I personally really am sick of both of these options, both in life and art.
Sure. There's got to be another way.
There's got to be another way. So I used theater studies and writing to try to come up with ways dramaturgically within the framework of a play where I could offer families some literally concrete things that they could do within themselves to try to redress this balance.
Okay, hold that thought. We're just going to listen to a word from our sponsors and we'll write back because I've got some questions for you about all of that.
Looking to make your next property move in Dunedin? Call the team that lives and breathes property. At NZ Property Solutions, we're 100% locally owned, packed with worldwide property experience, bold ideas, and serious property market know-how. We're passionate, connected, and yes, we love a good laugh too. Ready for a cracking result? Call the team at NZ Property Solutions today and let's get you moving. 0800 22 96 55.
A huge thank you to our sponsors, Denise Casey and the New Zealand Property Solutions team. I know if I was a house, I'd want to be sold by them. Right, so just to recap what we were talking about, we're talking about the care inequity in the home, particularly in the West, and your master's research, Kelly. And all of this is really interesting because in the last couple of years, you were in a season at the Court Theatre in 2025, a season of Fun Home, which saw you away from Dunedin for 3 months, roughly.
Yep.
And you are now also about to head on out on a three-month tour of schools across the country. So at home, you've got you are yourself and your lovely husband, Peter, and your daughter, Scarlett. And so I'm so interested to talk to you about how this worked in your household, how it went kind of broaching the subject of the fact that you would be not in the home and out of town for several months. I'm curious to know, was Peter like right on board with that from the start, not a moment's hesitation, or was this something that you had to help him to wrap his head around? Was he always willing? Like, I'm really curious to know how you navigated that whole thing, because this is really important to you. This is career stuff, paid work,
dream role. That's a great question. So firstly, I was 2024, which was the year I was supposed to finish my master's. I got the dream role in musical theater. Haha, how funny. How funny there. But it was this highly feminist queer musical called Fun Home. It just honestly, the peak of my artistic joy would
Amazing.
Be to do this role. It's like something I'd always wanted
and
to do.
And the antithesis of all the roles you had
and
been
exactly,
previously
playing. And exactly, the antithesis of the roles I'd been playing previously. And I just, all the stars aligned and I was offered this role. And ironically, because I was studying, you know, balance in the home, my home front, my husband and daughter were like, oh my gosh, we're going to make this work. This is so awesome. Whereas with the university, it was actually quite difficult for me to extricate myself from that setting.
Oh, that's so interesting.
It was really interesting.
Like to put it on hold kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
To put it on hold because I decided I definitely needed to do a deferral for a few months so that I can really focus on this heavy, beautiful, big piece of theater, which was also a full-time job. And, yeah, I had to jump through quite a lot of hoops to
That's
put that on
pretty
hold.
That's pretty ironic.
And, you know, it was.
Yeah.
It was. Now, Peter and Scarlett were both – I mean, Scarlett is just such a big cheerleader most of the time. She's a tween, so, you know, look, we have our moments. But she had helped me, you know, with the songs for the audition and the dialogue. And so – when I got the role, she was so excited.
Oh, okay.
And she was
beautiful.
Just like, this is amazing. And Peter knew how much I wanted it. And, you know, there was no question that we weren't going to make it work. I didn't have to do any convincing.
But
it was just a lot of logistics.
Yeah, sure.
But, no, I think – I mean, prior to having Scarlett, and prior to the pandemic, which still exists, but, you know, the part where we were – mandated to, you know, be in one place and theater was virtually dead. Prior to that, I had done a lot of traveling around for shows. And so it was something that we were used to. But that did come to an abrupt halt when I was pregnant and had Scarlett at home. And then that, you know, just when she started getting more independent that I could look at taking out of town roles again, because we were in COVID. So it has been an unintentionally longer gap than I expected.
Yeah, sure. Mm. And so, I mean, I love Peter. You know, I love Peter. He's a true gentleman.
Yes.
We love him. Did he have that thing when you came back? Was there ever a sort of admission of that revelation of like I had no idea how much you do?
Not in those words.
Just throwing Peter under the bus
here. Not in those words, but you could see by the joy and the light in his eyes, Harriet, when I walked through the door.
When you walked through the door. The relief.
The relief.
That descended.
Yeah. You were like, oh, you've been carrying a heavy load, my friend. I mean, it was a horrible time. Like, we had a room flooded, like, the day before I left.
Oh, no.
Like, a pipe burst in the washing machine and it flooded through. And so he was sleeping on, like, a blow-up mattress on the floor for, like, ages. And I just slowly backed away and was like, well, bye. I gotta go.
Okay.
Hope it goes great.
Oh, these things are always meant to test us, sent to test us at those times. But he coped. He did
it.
They survived. And you're doing it again.
And
Scarlett's even older.
Yeah.
And they kind of know what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. We don't have lots of family around,
but we
do have a beautiful theater, Fano, and they really help come together. And I've got a lot of wonderful babysitters on tap.
Including one of my children. Yeah, if she would just get her restricted license.
I know, that would really help me out.
Stop failing it. But anyway.
Yeah, that. So, you know, we make it work. I definitely still find myself being like, remember, you need to tell me which days you need cover on so that we can together work it out.
Yeah.
I prefer to do this in advance.
Yep.
And he is at the moment doing a little bit of stuff last minute, which then I'll go, well, I'll figure it out. It's all on me, you know, whereas he's a lot more, I wish he would have more of a sense of urgency about it. I'm trying to think how do I frame this so to keep my marriage alive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's got a way more she'll be right mentality than
right.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds like you and I are preparing for a show.
It does.
Oh my gosh. That's why we're a match made in heaven on
exactly.
stage. Just like you're a match made in heaven in your marriage. That's
yeah.
cute. So speaking of your household, so you are from the US. You can tell us where you're from in the US. And then Peter is British.
Mm-hmm.
And then Scarlett is this cute little fusion of Kiwi British American. And I think that's really fascinating, and I'd love to know how your household ticks in terms of, like, are there traditions that are unique to each of those cultures that you have learned to embrace or definitively rejected, or, you know, just how do you bumble along?
Like, I'll just go on the record and first and foremost say that I'm absolutely against Christmas cake, fruit cake of any kind.
Okay.
Absolutely banned. You can use that as a doorstop.
So you don't have Christmas cake in the States?
Well, look, no, we do. In fact, it's like a joke in the States. Like if you offer someone a fruitcake or a Christmas cake, it's like an insult.
Right. Okay. You don't like that person. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, oh my God, you know, it's like you get on a toilet brush or something.
And so you think it's disgusting? Or like truly, or just because you're American?
Both.
Okay.
It's, I'll double down on that and say,
Oh, I love
I won't touch it.
I love a good bit of.
Well, Peter's mother makes it one just for him every year, and Scarlett likes it. So there you go. But the communication is funny. I mean, I'm American. I am from San Francisco Bay Area, but I have now lived in Alta Ponte, Dunedin over half my life.
Sure.
So I still, as you can hear in my weird trans-Pacific dialect, I can't. You can take the girl out of the bay, but blah blah blah. Peter is, he would say he's British and Kiwi, but he grew up in the UK, so he's British.
He's so British.
We've met him.
Yeah.
My biggest issue is, because I tend to take things quite literally, too, and I need definitive answers, I'll be like, hey, you good to pick up Scarlett tomorrow after school? And he'll say something like, that should be all right. And I'm like, and when will you know if it will be all right? And he's like, well, I just said it should be.
And you're like, oh, my like, God. Is that all right? Or is it?
Yeah. 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 Yes or no. And so those sort of cultural things, we hem and haw about, if you will.
You do. You hum and haw about. I don't know what the British do. What do they do? I don't know. They just stiff up a lip.
They stiff upper lip it. And Peter does. He's a very even keel, typical British person, the stereotype of, you know, oh, hold it in. And I guess am the American stereotype of let it out.
Overshare it. Yeah, I know. This is why we love you.
Yeah.
That actually reminds me of something I was going to talk about a bit later on. Yeah. But like, we often have these things where I'll be like, oh my God, I'm going to just actually say the thing because this is the Frank and Courageous podcast.
Say it.
So I recently had a cyst at the bottom of my vagina, random. Mm-hmm. And I remember messaging you and saying like, okay, so this crazy thing's happened and TMI. And you're like, TMI?
Yeah.
There's no such thing. And then the vice versa, something happened recently and I was like, TMI?
Oh,
no
thrush.
Way.
It was a thrush. It was thrush also thing. Vagina related. I was like, just waiting in line for my thrush cream. Lol.
Oh, yeah. Spill the beans, man.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to. And I just think it's so interesting. Why do we, like, we know that about each other.
But then we go.
So why do we do, oh my God, TMI. I don't know. Like, what is that about? What are we protecting ourselves from?
Maybe it's just we're used to it because other people who aren't us might be like, wow, that was way too much information.
I don't know if it's echo chambers, though, but maybe. I find that my group of people that I communicate with regularly, which is vast, it's game on. And this is the point of this podcast. I want to be able to talk about the things.
That's wonderful. I think that's wonderful because I don't believe in too much context. No such thing.
Yeah.
I want all the context.
All the details.
All the details. Yep. I want you to start at the beginning. I want you to meander off here. I want you to tell me this. I want you to tell me the size of it, where it was located. I'd take a picture.
Yeah. You know? Sure. Yes. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Like, okay, so what I can tell you is that I think it started one day because I accidentally wore one of the kids' pairs of knickers to work.
This is like extreme chafe.
I think that might have been the beginning of the of the cyst. Anyway, there's more I could tell you, but we don't have time. So, I don't know. I also feel like there's that relatable thing. You know, when you're really honest about the stuff, usually there's something that will strike a chord with someone else that they've had a similar experience or, and then you don't feel like you're just this crazy person going through the world having these really weird thoughts that are all your own or weird things that are happening to you and nobody else has ever suffered from that either. Yes. And there's some sort of comfort in the knowledge that other people are going through the same or similar weird stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we've also spoken about the fact that you and I, we are the type of people or the kinds of faces or vibes that other people gravitate to us to share their deepest and most ridiculous.
I don't know what it is.
The checkout girl, supermarket, whatever.
The person at the checkout. I've had DMs with so many people. Like, just, I don't know what my face is giving off. And I am genuinely like, oh, hey, how's it going? You know, like I will talk to, I don't think it's okay to sit next to someone and not like acknowledge their presence. Like, yes. It's just, to me, it's just really weird. It's like more uncomfortable than to not say, hey.
Yeah.
Just a hello.
Yes, absolutely.
And then I don't know what it is, maybe because people are used to be surrounded by others that are, you know, have the blinders on and go about their business, and that's fine too. But like, it's like my hello and my face gives them like a little tiny crack in the door, and then they get in there.
They get in.
And they're like, well, you know, and everyone always just tells me earnestly about their day. Well, it was going great, but then my grandpa called, and I'm like, "Where? What? Huh?
Huh? I that was just a courtesy.
I was
hello.
Being nice.
I kind of just want to get back to my book now. Yeah,
yeah.
And but then next thing you know, you're like knee deep in marital problems. Mm-hmm. Marital problems.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't know what it is, but I sure as hell like to tell you everything.
Thank you. I also like to tell you everything. And I think it's that you feel that you're not going to be judged too. Like sometimes,
yes.
Sometimes I
maybe
just need
that's the face.
To get it out.
Yeah. Maybe you have the non-judgmental face.
Or that my face is so contorted with various expressions that people are like, she's seen it all.
Or that you're feigning interest in a massive way.
Yeah.
You are an actor.
Yes,
after
that's
all.
True.
After all. Now, another really interesting thing about you that, mm-hmm. that I am throwing you a curveball here because I didn't send it to you in the list of things.
Go for it.
You feeling good?
Yeah.
You're feeling okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So you were raised in a very religious household, Kelly.
Yes.
This is almost a whole episode
on
its own. You have even referred to it as a cult at times, and some of the key messages of this religion are that believing that the physical body isn't real.
Yeah.
And that any, well, you can probably take it from here.
Sure. But a nutshell is I was raised as a Christian Scientist. And the core beliefs are, if I can boil down essentially, it has nothing to do with Scientology. It just has the word science in it. Is that your five senses are basically an illusion. And so the boiled down concept is like you are a concept as a human. So you're like the number seven. And the number seven can't get sick, so neither can you. And that once you understand that you exist outside of your senses and as an idea, you can essentially transcend physical and other mental issues. And I'm here to tell you that that has not worked for me.
I was going to ask you, like, how on earth has that affected your relationship with your body growing up and now?
I'm so glad you asked this randomly because I am on this huge, like, feminine embodiment, like trip right now.
Right.
Which sounds very woo-woo. And, like, just to be clear, because of my Christian Science background, I balked from anything spiritual. Like yoga, even. I was like, absolutely not. It's too adjacent to spirituality, like for decades.
Yeah.
Decades. I had a lot of therapy. Shout out to my therapist.
10,000
I won't
hours,
say her name because she hates when I do that. No. No, because then everyone will be like, oh, please, I want to go to her. Look what she did with Kelly.
Love
She's
it.
A paragon
That's
of
right.
excellence. But yeah, I really grew up very disembodied and very in my head because a lot of the exercises we did were like, to pretend there was a thought whispering in your head like, I think I have a cold. And then we'd have to be like, no, that's not true. I don't have a cold. And so any cognitive behavioral therapy or like overthinking is really gets me stuck and very disembodied, literally disassociated.
Yeah.
And I used to have panic attacks about my existence. Like, I don't know if anyone out there, shout out to if you've had a panic attack about the fact that you think you're not real. Apparently this is like a common kind of panic attack seed.
Motivation.
Starter kit. The sourdough starter of panic attacks is like, what if I'm not real? and so, I've recently, very recently, been getting really into sort of more embodiment practice. I've always found for me like meditation that is body focus, like feel your left toe, feel yes. your right toe, really helpful.
As opposed to clear the mind,
as opposed to watch the thought and let it pass. I cannot do that.
No, absolutely not.
I'm going to grab that thought. I'm going to tangle myself up in it.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay up for 10 hours with this thought.
And take it into next week.
I'm going to take it into next week.
Sure. I think those of us with busy brains will. Yeah.
Definitely. So, I'm doing a lot of, I guess it used to be called kind of somatic work, but that's comes from a more male patriarchal lens. So I guess feminine embodiment, but basically work that really focuses on feeling sensation. And what I've noticed about it is then if I actually pay attention to what my body is feeling and get really dwell on it, how am I trying to say this? I know what I'm feeling, like emotionally, right? So if you intellectually say, how am I don't know. But if I check in with my body and I'm really sitting and paying attention, all of the sudden I start having these emotions that before were really flatline.
Right.
The more I pay attention to the body, the more I understand the difference between when I'm sad, when I'm angry, when I'm confused,
because
when I'm upset.
Because you feel those things in your body.
Because I feel those things in my body.
And so therefore the body-mind combination, like they're not separate entities.
No, exactly. I did say that to you. Okay, I've just had this like really big revelation to myself where I'm like, oh my God, the mind is part of the body.
Yes.
Duh.
Yeah.
Like it makes so much sense. But I've spent so long trying to separate them.
And that's not just you.
No.
We are all so busy.
Yeah.
And so our lives are so chaotic and there's so much overwhelm.
Mm.
I'd say that most people are quite far removed from what their body is telling them.
I think
we're
so.
We're on our screens in every spare moment. Like if we actually could have the time to reconnect with our bodies. I've also been on a bit of a rediscovery of all of that, you know, with this voice disorder that I've developed and where that's come from and how that, you know, all of that stuff.
I was going to tell you this for your voice, but for everything that we're talking about, I've been following Elf Lyons. She's like a physical comedian, clown, theater maker.
Okay.
She's Irish, so she has a beautiful accent.
Oh, cute.
And she said something really amazing the other day about physical theater, which was she was talking about, you know, you don't have to have a body that functions in a certain way or have to have this huge level of flexibility to do clown and physical theater. You just find out all the ways you can move and you adapt to that and do what you can still do so many movements without being a quote-unquote dancer.
Like an acrobat.
Yeah,
that's right.
And I've been thinking about that with voice as well.
Oh, the different ways in which we can communicate.
Yeah,
even with all the different types of voices. And I'm really coming to terms with the voice thing in terms of like, the other ways in which we can be heard, or like we're quite prejudiced about voices.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are a myriad of different ways people express themselves vocally, and that we should just, none of those have any less of a right to have a platform.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because sometimes I get a bit hung up, like, you know, I'm doing the podcast and at the moment my voice is okay, but what about when it's not good? But I'm like, well, I mean, what we have to talk about is still
the
good.
Content is what matters.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we're going to. The content is what matters. On that note, we're going to have another little cheeky word from our sponsors.
Looking to make your next property move in Dunedin? Call the team that lives and breathes property. At NZ Property Solutions, we're 100% locally owned, packed with worldwide property experience, bold ideas, and serious property market know-how. We're passionate, connected, and yes, we love a good laugh too. Ready for a cracking result? Call the team at NZ Property Solutions today and let's get you moving. 0800 22 9655.
Right. So now, to crack on with a couple more questions that I've got up my sleeve, it's kind of a crazy time in the world right now. Like, I mean, it's always a crazy time, but this feels particularly crazy. Mm. And to be fair, the States, Americans, are getting a pretty bad rap in the press in New Zealand, everywhere. How does that feel for you, being an American born and bred? Like, what does that feel like?
It's immensely changed since I've been here, probably because I've changed. I mean, obviously, America has changed vastly in the last 20. I've been here about 22 years. I found it really difficult when I first moved here. So Bush was president. Bush
remember
Jr.
Remember when we used to wish?
Oh, like, so like, horrible.
Yeah, that's...
And it wasn't great, but...
And I
found it so hard. It was my first experience living outside of the U.S. and I was really young and people were really like, you're American. How could you vote for Bush? I was like, well, first of all, I didn't. And second of all, I found myself really defensive, so much so that I got really in my head about my identity and being American. And I tried to talk softer and dull my voice and just found myself really mushing down my personality.
Interesting.
Yeah. Whereas now it's like, look, I'm fine with it. Like, I'm half American, I'm half Kiwi. I'm grateful to be here. I live here by choice. I'm so used to being judged and people assuming things about it. And look, honestly, the things people assume about me, it's not a fraction of what other people experience judgment wise. So to be honest, I don't really think about it that much anymore. Like, if people really want to put certain tropes or ideas out there, that's fine. But it really says more about their lack of understanding of globalism than, like, anything else.
Yeah, totally.
It's really easy to throw America and Americans under the bus.
Currently,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, currently, sure. But also, from the New Zealand perspective.
Also, Australians. No.
Also, we don't talk enough about Canadians, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think it's quite reductive if you...
It sure is.
Because it really belies the whole point of why there is so much unrest in America right now because of the polarization and...
Yeah, and there's so much unrest, but then there's, as a backlash of that, there's been this most incredible, phenomenal outpouring of human spirit and kindness and people coming together. So why we should focus on that as well.
Look for the helpers.
Look for the helpers. Yeah, totally. And interesting to hear you say that you feel like you've moved on from all of that and you don't feel like you have to dull yourself in the fullest expression of who you are.
Yeah.
And that is all part of the joy of aging as well, do you think?
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Becoming comfortable in your skin with who you are, giving less merits about what other people think. So you said that you're 42. And how are you feeling about it all?
Look, it's such a privilege.
Privilege.
Yeah.
It really is.
It really is.
It absolutely it is. I could not. I'm really glad you opened with that because that's how I feel.
Yeah.
It's really such an amazing thing. And I hate this culture around the anti-aging or the shame in aging.
I hate it too.
Yeah. It's like...
I'm getting all choked up.
Yeah, she's emotional. You're emotional. That's so beautiful, Kelly.
I am because it's as you know, Harriet and I had a really close friend die. Passed away last year. Far too young. Any age is too young, but
too young.
We were born in the same year, and I can't think about that statement or think about aging without thinking about her.
Yeah,
I just can't. And
oh man,
sorry, but and it's like not everyone gets this. I consider myself really lucky, and I even have to pull up my daughter about it when she's like, because you're old. And I went through a phase, I think I'm coming out of that phase, where I'd make a lot of old jokes about myself.
Right, self-deprecating.
Self-deprecating. Americans aren't good at that, so this was new for me. I'd be like, I made a lot of jokes when I turned 40, you know, on stage as well.
Sure.
But like, I don't know, it's another one of those traps I've found where as a woman, like, I'm still getting older people say to me, older men say things like, oh, well, you're really young and you don't have a lot of experience. And it's like, I'm 40 years old. So you're going to tell me that I don't have enough experience or age to get a certain type of respect in some areas of my career and art, but I'm too old to contribute to society in these other ways. It's just preposterous.
It is ridiculous.
And look, the perimenopause is a pain in the ass.
Symptomatically.
I have, I have, the women in my family begin that journey early. So I am like all for treating it in every way that I can to help myself have a comfortable experience aging. But honestly, it's
a privilege.
It's a privilege.
You know, my mum, bless my mum, you'll hear a lot about my mum on this podcast. Recently, she, just to add to what you were saying earlier, recently she said something to me like, oh my gosh, you're rapidly becoming famous. And I was like, well, you know, I'm nearly 48, so I don't
How
think
rapid
we call
is it?
It rapid. But also, not so long ago, we were having a conversation and I was saying to her that I was anticipating trying to sort of make hay while the sun shines because I was anticipating a time in the perhaps not too distant future where I may no longer be able to, and I was going to say speak because of my voice disorder, but she jumped in and said, perform because you'll be 50 and you can't perform over 50.
Because they come and get you.
Oh, yeah.
Or they just say, come out with a big hook.
No one's interested. Like, no one wants to see some kind of crazy old lady over 50 sharing her stories on stage. Like, and it just blew me. I was like, Mom, I'm only just getting started.
Yeah. And I think your fan base would disagree.
Yeah. And it just was interesting. I was like, wow, that is so fascinating that is – not that many, just one generation ago of a way of thinking about women. And personally, I think the idea of becoming invisible to the male gaze is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Could not love it more.
Yeah.
You mean I can say? I feel like it's a superpower.
Yeah.
Not a curse.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And I wish no one ever reaches these stages in life and goes, oh, I wish I had figured that out later. Like, you only ever wish you knew these things earlier.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I, you know, like that show that we were talking about, Fun Home, that I got the chance to do in Christchurch a few years ago, I was playing a very masculine presenting character for that role. And so, like, I would go on stage with barely any makeup and, like, you know, just like a t-shirt and jeans. And it was so freeing.
Oh
my
so
God.
Good.
I was like, is this how men have been doing theater for years? They're just like, oh, I got a little bronzer. I'm ready to go. I was I can't believe it.
Yeah. So lucky.
Meanwhile, we've been like, corset.
Yes.
10 sit-ups, putting on fake abs with my bronzer.
Lashes.
Yeah. So over that. And so I've been doing my stand-up, recently with absolutely no makeup. Look, I'm not saying this is changing the world, right? But let me tell you, nothing happened. I got on stage. I told my jokes.
They were no funnier
or less funnier.
Yeah.
And it was fine.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Sure, a few people were like, are you unwell? But...
Kelly, are you tired?
Yeah. Of course I'm tired. Yeah. I could be tired with makeup on, or I'd be tired without it.
I know.
And look, obviously this isn't a thing to say, like, if you can't wear this, you do whatever the heck you want to do.
Of course, we must.
Right, we must. Like, I'm very vain about my skin and my skincare. Look, I have, someone was like, oh, what are your eye bag recommendation? You know, the little masks. And I was like, well, there's four that I like and use, you know.
Okay.
It feels amazing.
I must get that list from you.
You must get the list.
I bet you could give it to our listeners.
But, you know,
We all have our hang-ups.
We all have our hang-ups.
We all have our thing that we like to take pride in or whatever. But just on the whole, I think, I was thinking about this with my teenage daughters and one of them in particular who's really into the makeup and all of that stuff. And I was thinking about it the other day. I was like, she's actually not even into this for boys.
Mm-mm.
It's like within the girls, within her group, and it's all about, like, impressing each other. And I'm like, I don't know how great this is, you know, that this is the culture that's coming through.
Well, and now it's coming in for the men, too, in the new way with the whole, looks-maxing thing and, like...
What's looks-maxing?
Oh, have you not heard about this?
No, you've got 2 minutes to talk about looks-maxing.
It's essentially, like, I don't know, so I'm not an expert. I've listened to a few podcasts, like, a thing where, like, men are taking their looks and their, like, measurements of their face and, like, the way they build their body and sculpt their hair, like, to the nth degree to become, like, the most attractive man they can, which is fascinating because it's, like, capitalism is so late stage that it's finally come
to the men.
To the men.
Oh,
from
my
beauty
God,
standards.
The world is over. Yeah. The world as we know it.
And I'm
over.
Like, well, the men are going to revolt and the men will change it because, yeah. you know, we've tried for years. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
The men won't stand for this. I'm sure they will.
They will not stand for the scrutiny. Ugh. They'll just get, what'll happen is we'll end up having to do it all for them.
For them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kelly, it has been so lovely to have you in the studio. I know you're an incredibly busy woman at the moment. You've got so much going on. I'm so grateful that you've given up an hour in your really busy schedule to be here with me doing this crazy new thing, this Tell Me Moya podcast. And before we go, I just wanted to ask if there's any last little tidbit you wanted to impart, to share, to leave the listeners with?
I think...
just to throw you once
just
again.
Just to throw me once. You know how much I love this. I don't know. I'm really stoked for you to be doing this. Like, your voice, I mean, not to be all cheesy about it, but really matters. And you have such a strong voice in our community of women, but our wider community here. And I'm so thrilled that people are going to be able to listen to you speak to others. And I'm just really stoked for you and really grateful to be here.
You. That's so lovely. I just cannot wait for the conversations. It's really just a giant ruse for me to actually be able to spend time
with your friends.
Great women and my friends. Yeah. So I was like, oh, the only way I'm going to be able to do this in my busy life is to create a podcast and schedule and interviews. But just without the Aperol spritz, but that's okay. You can't have it all, perhaps. So you've been listening to Harriet Moya in conversation with Kelly Hocking on Tell Me Moya. For more information about the Voice Lab, go to www.voicelab.nz, or you can follow Kelly Hocking on Facebook or Instagram. Kelly Hocking Performer is her handle. You've been listening to Tell Me Moya, where the conversations with women are brave, bold, and occasionally make you clutch your pearls in a good way. Heard something that made you gasp, giggle, or immediately text your group chat? Don't worry, we've got you. You can replay this episode or dive into more colourful conversations at oar.org.nz or find us on your favourite podcast platform. For more information about my shows and shenanigans, follow me on Instagram and Facebook, Harriet Moya, Entertainer MC. Thanks so much to Denise Casey and the legends at New Zealand Property Solutions for their tremendous support. Now, go on, hit subscribe. You know you want to.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.